PathBreakers.com. Hi, welcome to PathBreakers. I'm your host, Upendra. Our guest today is Dr. Gullapalli Nageswara Rao, a world-renowned ophthalmologist and the founder of the L.V. Prasad Eye Institute in Hyderabad. His life has been singularly dedicated and focused on preventing and treating blindness and vision impairment, leading to the creation of the world's largest integrated eye care network. He is the former chair of the International Agency for Prevention of Blindness, the former president of Academia Ophthalmologica International, inducted into the Ophthalmology Hall of Fame, and was also conferred the Padma Shri in 2002. He's published over an astonishing 300 papers, and to talk with him today to understand and learn a little bit more about him and his journey with eyes and eye care. On that note, a very warm welcome to Dr. Rao. It's a privilege to host you on PathBreakers.
Thank you.
All right, so Dr. Rao, I always like to start at the very beginning, and the beginning of every story is the most interesting. So why eye care, and what led you to this specialization in particular?
I think in my case, the choice was simplified by the fact that my father was an ophthalmologist.
All right.
So that influence was there. And also during my medical school, I did not find any other specialty more attractive. So I had decided to choose ophthalmology.
And if it weren't ophthalmology, where do you think Dr. Rao could have gone to? Which direction may you have headed in?
The other area that attracted me in those days was the pathology.
I see.
And, perhaps cancer research.
All right.
Even though I did not have too much of a introduction into that area, that kind of was fascinating in those days. And I thought I would pursue that if I didn't go into ophthalmology.
All right. So loss to the world of cancer is a gain to the world of eye care. All right. So, of course, you studied abroad and you returned to India in 1986. What was the state of eye care in India at that time? And what led to the formation of the L.V. Prasad Eye Institute?
The eye care in India in 1986 was suboptimal.
Okay.
Because of a number of reasons. One was we did not have access to high-quality equipment, because the customs duty was very high and hardly anybody could afford to buy that equipment. So we were practicing in suboptimal conditions throughout the country. Only a few islands of excellence existed here and there. But in general, the average quality of care across the country was far from optimal.
All right. And how did L.V. Prasad Eye Institute come to life?
We used to live in the U.S. until 1986. My wife and I always wanted to come back and do something in India. And around 82, early 82, late 81, we both sat down and decided it was about time to set a timetable and make the plan. So we decided that we would go back in 86 and we stuck to that time schedule. And that's how we moved from 82 to 86. We slowly planned for the return. And the last 1 year was much more intensive. And we finally landed here in the beginning of, on actually October 6th of 1986.
All right. And if you see your journey, the scale and impact of your work is nothing short of colossal and massive. You have one center of excellence, 3 tertiary eye care centers, 20 secondary eye care centers, 184 primary care centers, and thousands of vision health guardians. When you look back at the first day when you started the institute, did you ever think it will get so large and impact so many lives?
Nothing close. When we actually started in Hyderabad, the vision was very limited. I had this aspiration to build a high-quality academic eye center along the lines of a university eye center in America.
Sure.
I always felt if they had that high-quality academic centers, why can't we have that in India? So that was my aspiration at that time, limited to Hyderabad, an academic eye center, doing patient care, education and research.
Okay. And when was that point in time when you thought, this is making sense, this is truly helping people, and I think I can scale? How many years did it take you till you reached that point where you thought, yes, now I can really grow this very large?
Yeah, so during the first 5 years, we consolidated our work in Hyderabad. And during that time, we initially started with clinical care of eye problems. Then we added the education component, initially training of just the ophthalmologists. And then later on added education of other cadres of eye care personnel. And then we also began the research, if it were almost from day one, because one thing we started was a medical record system. The documentation is along the standards of a university medical center in the US. So that automatically makes every patient record a research subject. So that's how we started. So from day one, we were into the mode of a research institution. So we always had our definition very clearly. When if we want to call ourselves an institute, we felt that you really have to create new knowledge, that is research, disseminate new knowledge, that is education, and practice new knowledge, that is doing the most current things for the benefit of the patients. So that was the principle with which we started, and those were the three elements: education, research, and patient care.
So your roots were actually very firmly and deeply rooted in research and education, which is possibly quite different from other organizations and institutions who emerged in healthcare.
Yes, that was because I was deeply involved in all those elements when I was in the US. Right. I was at the University of Rochester. About half my time I was doing clinical practice, the other half time was teaching and research. So that gave me a strong foundation in all these areas. And that's the reason why I was very particular that we should incorporate all those components in the working of our institute. And also there was not much of eye research going on in the country. And then it was about time that India begins to make serious contributions to eye research, I felt. There were only 2-3 other institutions which were making an attempt in doing eye research at that time, the one being the Eye Center at the All India Institute of Medical Sciences, in fact, my alma mater.
Right. And would it be fair to say that research is still closest to your heart as a DNA?
No, right now I would say I went past all those areas of interest as the prime interest, while everything is equal to me. Okay. The one thing closest to my heart is the rural eye health.
I see.
Taking the best of care to the remotest areas, to the most underprivileged people, where the need is the most.
Right. So a very critical question that I ask of many leaders, including someone like yourself, is when you are at the intersection of something as sensitive as healthcare, the focus on quality and safety is extremely high.
Yep.
And then when you try and scale it up, it starts getting very difficult. Mm-hmm. So now when you trace your journey, you've helped over 30 million people. As a team and an organization, you have conducted over 1.7 million surgeries.
Yep.
You've distributed 100,000 corneas.
Yep.
And you've reached over 12,000 villages. Mm-hmm. Now, these are mammoth numbers. How do you balance and ensure safety with quality outcomes at all times? What's the secret sauce?
Number one thing is, from day one, the underlying parameter for us in everything that we do has been quality. Quality, quality, and quality. If we can't do something with high quality, we don't do it. As simple as that. And that's how we started it. How could we scale up? Because we did one step at a time. Initially, when we moved from Hyderabad into, let's say, the first rural eye center in a remote part of Adilabad district of Andhra Pradesh, now Telangana, We worked on that model 24/7 to make sure that we are starting. This was something very unique and new, going to a remote rural area and create an eye center that is of high quality, providing comprehensive eye care to everybody that comes seeking care. So we had to work on all the elements, put together a team, train them, and get going. The principles were very, very simple in some sense. It's the same as any organization. The right kind of infrastructure, well-trained human resources, putting the right systems in place, and then follow it up with monitoring and evaluation. So those were the principles that we followed. We started with one, then we started slowly building up and ramping up the numbers. The key to all this was, in my view, the well-trained human resources aligned with every aspect of our culture and values.
Now, any journey is fraught with risks. And when it comes to healthcare and medical care, it's even more acute. So in your experience and in your opinion, which are some of the major risks that one should be aware of and be ready to encounter in a domain like healthcare, and all the more reason in India?
I think the number one is because we are so cost conscious in India, people hesitate to spend for healthcare, quite often not realizing that healthcare really costs money. So in a setting with the limited constrained resources, to provide quality care is not easy. So that means you have to have very tight systems with incredible fiscal discipline. That is one thing. If we don't do it, it's very easy to go broke and go down the tube. The second is the kind of culture that you create in the team. One thing that we are always proud to say is in the 33 years of our journey, even though we hear so much of that in our country, we never had any issues of corruption. We never paid a bribe to anybody, nor did we take any such thing from anybody. So, for example, there is no tipping system in our institute. All the staff, all the members of our team, from the housekeeping to the chairman, follow the same philosophy. And we never had to take action against anybody in such kinds of things. So the discipline, the kind of training that we gave every cadre of people. And the other thing that worked for us is just about every employee that we recruited in the beginning for the initial 10 years or so, absolutely raw. They just came out of schools, colleges, ophthalmology training without any previous work experience. So we created our own culture, and that homogeneity of culture at that point was a big, big plus. And the second thing was the reliance on the brilliance of youth that paid off good dividends for us. We selected the brightest of youngsters, gave them an opportunity, and told them to run with it. And they chased their dreams, and the cumulative impact of all that is what happened at L.V. Prasad.
So, Dr. Rao, it's heartening to know of leaders in organization who can state with such confidence and with a proven track record that you can build businesses in India without cutting corners or without paying bribes and continue to do so. And what do you think you're doing better or differently from so many others? Because when you keep hearing of bureaucratic bottlenecks, red tapes, working in the government is a pain, these are things one hears of more often than not. Is it resilience? Is it focus? What's working for you better?
One was definitely focus. Second is being very transparent in what we did. And we were very fair. Whatever policies and rules we have, we apply to everybody uniformly. We never made any favors to anybody. So initially there was some kind of resistance. People resented it because our culture was completely alien to what was pervasive in India at that time. And so there was a lot of criticism about that. But then people began to appreciate it after a while. And by standing firm with those values, with those policies, in the long run, it certainly helped us. So that's what made us strong. As far as the not having corruption is, because everything is open, everything is transparent, there was no scope for that. And in dealing with the government, we really had to deal with them to a very limited extent for a long time in the beginning. And I think one thing I found was, while there were a lot of complaints, if you planned for it and gave adequate time, things would happen. And then after the first 5 years, I think there was some appreciation from the governmental system also from what we're doing. And that helped us. And the biggest winner for us is that people realized that we treat everybody, whether they pay zero or they pay a lot of money. From the wealthiest of India to the poorest of India have been our patients. And that everybody is treated with a dignity and respect became known to all the people, and that really helped us.
And doctor, I must ask you this. So you're a professionally qualified doctor, ophthalmologist. How do you make that transition from being an expert, a professional in an area, to becoming a leader and an organization builder? And are there times when you miss directly treating the patients because you spend so much time in organization building and management?
The first 15 years, I was doing everything. I was doing 4 days of patient care.
I see.
And 3 days of everything else. There was no other life for me. That was my life. And do I miss seeing patients? No, not really. Because I moved out of this in a very slow fashion, in a gradual way, giving up one area after the other. So much so, I'm very proud to say, for the past decade or so, hardly any patient asks for me. Nobody insists that we want to see Dr. Rao or things like that. They come here on the name of the institute, and they realize any doctor working here is good. So that's a big advantage for us. The only time I miss is when I sit in major conferences and when people are presenting cutting-edge techniques in the area where I practice, that is corneal transplantation. That was my area. There's a tug on the heart saying, oh, maybe I would have been doing those things now. Otherwise, I don't miss it. Part of the reason is my time was immediately taken by so many other things, and there was no time to miss the clinical work.
If you trace your journey over the last 34 years from the time that you came back to India from 1986 to the year that we're in now, which are some of your more pivotal and defining moments which either shaped you or gave a boost to your belief in what you were doing? Can you share a couple of those moments in your journey?
The very first one is actually before I came, after we made the decision to come and we started making plans, moving towards the return to India, the introduction to L.V. Prasad family. I had no idea. I didn't know them at all. A mutual friend of ours, a cardiac surgeon in the U.S., introduced me to his son, Mr. Ramesh Prasad, who was visiting him. And then we talked, and then I came and met them a few months later in their home in Chennai. They decided to support this cause. That was the first pivotal moment that made, as many people say, to make the first million is more difficult. But in fact, for me, the making the first million was easy, because they came forward and they donated the land in the most prestigious location of Hyderabad, the Banjara Hills, 5 acres. And then on top of that, they gave the money that helped us to build the first 50,000 square feet of the building. And the money we raised in America from friends, family, everybody, helped us to buy the initial equipment. That's how we got started. So that was the first pivotal thing. The second pivotal thing was when the ophthalmic industry and the international non-governmental organizations involved in eye care began to believe in us and started supporting. So that gave us a big boost. This happened in the first 7-8 years. And that's when the local community support began to come. That's the third moment. Throughout this process, we have been fortunate that we, starting from the beginning, we had this reputation that if we go to LVP, we get the best possible training. So the brightest of the bright among the ophthalmologists coming out of their MS post-graduation began to come to us for post-graduation training called fellowships. So we had access to the best of brains and talent available within ophthalmology. So that was another one. And the next one was linkages with major universities in the U.S. By the time we were 10 years old, we were pretty well known all over the world. And then there was attraction to many international universities in the U.S., Europe, Australia, that expressed their interest in collaboration. And that collaboration helped us in training our people in research methodology, improve our education standards. And then that took us to the next level. And then finally, another pivotal moment was the going into the rural areas. That started around 10, 12 years after we started. That happened while we were taking care of everybody irrespective of their ability to pay. It certainly pained us that the complications we are seeing in Hyderabad could be avoided, a lot of them. So that was the motivation for us to get into rural areas and began to develop the rural network. That was another pivotal thing. And the most recent one was getting into technology innovation. We have a technology innovation center, develop technology products to essentially give the fruits of the best of technology to the least advantaged people in the world. So with that vision, we started the center. We developed a few products that are out there helping a lot of people. And that's been our latest thing in our journey. And of course, two other areas where we're very proud of is, one is iBanking. When we started the iBank in 1989, everybody told me, forget it. You forget about doing corneal transplants in India, nobody donates eyes. But fortunately, we didn't stop at that level, but we pursued it. With the help of American iBanking organizations, we replicated the American model for the first time in India and started the first international standard iBank in Hyderabad. And now that is one of the three biggest in the world. And Hyderabad is the only city for the past decade with no waiting list for corneal transplants. And we actually supply corneas to the many parts of the country too. So there again, it was shown, if we put everything in, you can succeed anything you want to achieve. So iBanking is a classic example, an example for the rest of the organ donation in some sense. And the other area where we are very proud is incorporating the rehabilitation. When we talk of comprehensive care, which is component of the universal health plan that the government talks about, universal health plan has three components. One is the prevention, second is treatment, that is curative, and the third is the rehabilitation of disabilities. So we have incorporated, we are the first eye institute in the world to incorporate all the three elements into our work. And the record of our rehabilitation institute is impressive, and we are proud of what they have achieved. So these are some of the different components that and along the way, of course, we participated very vigorously in the advocacy efforts, formulation of policy and planning in eye care, both at the national and global levels.
So as I hear you speak, Dr. Rao, there is an immense focus on research, education, and innovation.
Yeah.
And many organizations, be it an impact or for-profit space, always struggle on investing enough resources, time, and bandwidth on these three areas.
Mm-hmm.
Any tips for them?
No, people ask me, can it be replicated in other areas of medicine? And I strongly believe yes. If people want to do it in any area of medicine, this is possible. But surprisingly, and the only thing that's happening where the combination of all this is happening is in our country is in the eye care. we have three classic institutions that are doing similar things as Sankar Netralaya in Chennai and Arvind Eye Care System in Madurai. The three of us, not-for-profit organizations founded by ophthalmologists, treating everybody, whether they pay or don't pay, are also globally recognized for our research output and for our education programs. So if we can do it, I think anybody can do it. I sincerely believe I am just an above average guy. And if I could pull this off, there's so many more brilliant people out there. Anybody can achieve a lot more than this.
So where is the issue? Is it that of belief or is it of inclination?
Both. I think it's a combination of belief and inclination. There's a saying, right? If you want to get something badly enough, you get it. How badly you want it is the question.
So you clearly have persistence in your DNA. So I would imagine there is a DNA somewhere out there.
I guess so.
Okay. And if I were to request you to look back at your professional career and journey, could you walk us through some decisions which went wrong? Or when you look back and say, hey, maybe this I should have thought or acted another way.
I think if I may say, the only thing that wrong judgment and decisions were made was in the area of picking the right people a few times. And we paid a price, but fortunately it was a small price and we recovered from that very quickly. But other than that, in terms of planning and the big vision and the progress we made with the growth of the institute, I can't think of anything that I would do differently.
So in an organization such as yours, where you pretty much founded it from the first brick and the foundation brick to where it is now, how do you detach the individual from the organization?
Even now, for the past some years, I'm not involved in the day-to-day.
Correct.
Actually, we are in the process of succession. And it would have happened by now, but for COVID, in the very last stage of that process, COVID interrupted and we had to postpone the final decision.
Right.
But the people shortlisted for the position are the ones we have been running our institute through this critical period of COVID. They have done a phenomenal job. It's a group of six people working together, running the institute today. And I'm only helping them from the side. And one of them will be chosen with all the six, even after that, forming the future leadership of team of LVP. Behind them is a pipeline of another 12 to 15 potential leaders between the age groups of 35 to 50. So we have a lot of bench strength, and I'm very confident that the future is very bright. So it doesn't depend on me.
So you speak as well as most corporate leaders who work in a classical, true for-profit sector, but you're possibly one of the few who's actually implemented it well. So hats off to you.
Thank you.
All right. So just to understand you a little bit better, how would you define Dr. Rao as the leader? How is it really to work with you? And how do you think you evolved over the last few decades?
For people who are transparent, straightforward, it's exceedingly easy to work with me. And people who deliver, who are sincere in their work, they have no problems at all. And they love it. And that's how a lot of youngsters prospered in our institute. So we select them and we give them a free rein to pursue whatever their dream is. And as long as they're doing well, nobody interferes with them. And we give them all the resources that are required. So my thing is, be fair to everybody. No favorites. Be transparent. And the third is, be available to every member of your team, whether it is a simple housekeeping lady or your vice chair, they should be able to come and talk to you if they want to. So that we have followed throughout, and that has helped. In some sense, we also have several concepts of, that we practice of egalitarianism, all the way from simple examples like sitting at the same table in the cafeteria and eating. Doesn't matter who that person is. And so these are all simple examples. And another example of classically what you see in India, you don't see in our institute. There is no reserved parking lot for chairman and consultants. Whoever comes first gets the slot. Whoever comes last gets the last slot. As simple as that. Things like that. So that makes the people very comfortable.
Okay. And when you're hiring talent, what is it that you typically look for?
Apart from the competence,
right,
alignment with our values. We are a value-based organization and we are very particular about it. We have identified 5 core values. That is excellence, equity, patient first, integrity, togetherness. So those who align with these values, along with their competence, are the ones we choose.
Okay. And now, coming back to you as a leader, when you come across a roadblock, a challenge, or something which you haven't unforeseen, and everything around you just seems to be crumbling, how do you deal with those situations? And if something doesn't work out, how do you pick yourself up again? What keeps that engine running?
If something is not working out, then I seek the advice of my colleagues, and then we discuss, and then we come to a decision. Is this something that is surmountable or unsurmountable? If it is surmountable and if it is within our hands, we'll put in even more effort to overcome that. But if it is something that's not possible to overcome, we just give up and then get on with our work and identify some other areas. So that's been our approach. But fortunately, the latter are far and few between, in between. So,
and what I can get an understanding of you, I don't think you're someone who gets bogged down very easily. And I don't think you take no for an answer very easily.
No, whenever some people tell me, that's not going to work, I take it as a challenge. At least I try. Right in the beginning, when we started the institute, everybody told me, what you are planning, what you are dreaming, it's impossible in India. It just will not happen. Every day I used to hear, this won't work in India, this won't work in India. I used to smile and tell them, maybe so, but let me try and let me have the satisfaction of having tried and failed. So that's been philosophy.
So you've eradicated no from your vocabulary is my takeaway on this one.
Yeah, to a large degree.
All right.
Except saying no to some people for certain things.
I know. I think we should say no for a few things for sure. Okay. So, Dr. Rao, I want to go into the state of the healthcare and more particularly. So I was wondering how to frame this question. So I thought I'd keep it very simple. How are our eyes in India today? Are they getting healthier? Are they getting worse? Where are we heading?
In general, the blindness and vision impairment problem is still of a large magnitude, even though in the past 2 decades, we have made significant progress. In fact, we are the best achiever in terms of controlling blindness among all the developing countries. That's because with all its limitations, Government of India has always been exceedingly supportive of blindness programs for nearly 30 since the time of Mrs. Indira Gandhi, when she actually included prevention of blindness as one of her 20-point program. So from that time on, there has been a lot of governmental support that certainly helped. Today, if we say anything available anywhere in the world is available in India for eye care. But that's not available to all people. That's the sad part of it. And that's where we have to do a lot of work. The magnitude of blindness, if you look at the sheer numbers, absolute numbers, remained about the same, a little less than 20 years ago. But That's because of the aging population and increase in population. But relatively, it has come down, the percentage has come down, and we are well on the way to tackle the other problems. Probably we have a good education infrastructure and lots of good educational institutions in the field of eye care. Today we get people from all over the world seeking opportunities to get their education in ophthalmology in India. And that's an excellent sign. And research is beginning to take off. Although we are still in the early stages of that evolution, very soon I'm sure with the many bright youngsters coming out, that will also take hold. And the only thing that I can say is there are several excellent islands of excellence in eye care in the country. But what needs to be worked on is to enhance the basic uniform standard of eye care across the country that is available to every citizen of India. There we still have to do a lot of work.
On the question of the state of our eyes, this is a very common question I come across and I personally faced it myself. With the amount of people spending time on screens, be it mobiles, laptops, with our change in lifestyles, are you seeing the quality of eyes and vision being negatively impacted in the younger age groups?
Yeah, the one thing that's proven so far is the increasing prevalence of myopia, short-sightedness. If you are not outdoors, if you are constantly confined indoors, constantly looking at the screens in children, the prevalence of myopia and the way it progresses is much faster. So that's been proven. So that's one thing beyond doubt. But the second thing is something called computer syndrome, where you have irritation of eyes, dry eyes, those kinds of things. So these are relatively minor problems. Beyond these two, as of now, we don't have evidence for any other major eye problems. But myopia is likely to be end up as some people say, the next pandemic in the world. Right. For example, it is expected that half the world's population might end up being myopic by 2050. So these are all the predictions that are coming. But so much so that in countries like Singapore, Hong Kong, and China, it's mandatory for the school children to get out of the classrooms for a minimum of 1 hour during the day. And the second thing that China has done is to have classrooms with glass walls to allow more light into the rooms. Because in addition to looking at distance, it's also felt light may have, illumination may have a role in the development of myopia. So these are all different things that are being done around the world. And in our country also, the incidence of myopia is increasing. We have a study that was supported by the World Health Organization, the urban component in Delhi, done by the All India Institute, and the rural component done by us in Mahbub Nagar district. There's a big difference in the myopia prevalence in children between Delhi and Mahbub Nagar.
Got it. So, Dr. Rao, if you were to glance into the future, what's your vision for eye care in India? And what should we as a nation be doing more of? And what should we be doing less of?
I think my vision for the future of India for eye care is to, for every citizen of our country to have access to high quality care nearest to where they live. So close proximity.
Okay.
And that becomes even more relevant in the current pandemic situation. In future, people will be probably reluctant to travel, at least in the foreseeable future, if not a long of distant future. So that's this one, availability and accessibility of care for everybody. What should we do most of? I think we should do more of investment into healthcare. We should do more of emphasis on quality and no compromise on that. And implementing standards rigorously should be a norm. It should not be an exception. Be it governmental hospital, private hospital, not-for-profit hospital, doesn't matter. Unless they meet the standards, they should not be functioning. less of, I think, is probably the interference in some sections from the governmental side. If something is going well, to let them run with it. Of course, with the proper regulatory controls from the governmental side. I'm not saying free for all and anyway and anything they do, but no, there should be regulation. Under the ambit of robust like a regulatory system, freedom for people to get on with their work and make progress.
So, Dr. Rao, there are several terminologies being used like health tech, AI, ML, bunch of these new emerging technologies. And along with that are coming fairly diverse and interesting business models, if I may use that term, or delivery models.
Yeah.
And it's evolving at a very rapid pace, right? People are trying a bunch of things. And I often look back and think to myself and ask, how much of this is about technology and how much is this about actually someone holding the patient's hand?
Yeah.
So how do you find the balance between technology and the human touch?
I think the winners in this game would be those who can balance the combine the, I said, talent with the technology.
Okay.
And where you achieve that balance, that organization will be very successful. Without talent, and it's not possible with technology alone to deliver high quality healthcare. And without technology in the present day world, the talent alone also cannot do it. But what is most important is we are talking about just the diagnosis and treatment part.
Right.
Above that is what medical and healthcare is supposed to be. That is caring. That caring can be given only by humans. Caring cannot be provided by technology. So that caring element should not be missed. But one of the benefits of technology, if it is leveraged properly, I feel, is the physicians, the doctors, the healthcare professionals will be freed of certain time by technology to use that for more caring of the individuals. So technology that way can help because it can make several tasks very easy, saves time for the healthcare professional, and that time can be spent on real caring of the individuals who are in distress.
So, Dr. Rao, the last question in this segment, your advice to professionals and entrepreneurs who are planning to or have just about entered the healthcare space in India. What's your advice to them sitting here right now where we are?
Good luck to you. There are lots of opportunities. but the only appeal that I make to everybody is don't limit your services to the most privileged in our country. Nearly half the people in our country even today go to bed hungry. I remember them also that they also require healthcare. Perhaps they require more healthcare. So in your investments, you can certainly spare a certain percentage of your investment to provide care for those people also and make sure that everybody gets the required care. That's the only appeal I make them. The second one that I want to make to them is invest into high quality healthcare, education of healthcare professionals. Because that is lacking now in our country. And the third is invest also into research.
So I was reading the other day, and I'm sure you'd have heard this quote, poor people don't need poor technology and poor solutions.
Yeah.
So, and I think that principle is, I just heard it. I remember reading it recently, sort of stopped my mind. And I can hear you saying that as well. Your focus on innovation and research is phenomenal. So, Dr. Rao, what we have in the show as a last segment is what we call as a quick fire. It's a lighter way of allowing us to get to know you a little better. So just let your hair down, enjoy yourself, all right?
Yeah.
So just a few questions and please have fun with it. Mountains or beaches?
Mountains.
All right. Your best book?
The Long Walk by about Nelson Mandela.
All right. Okay. Interesting. Favorite movie?
I think recently Mahanati.
Yes, I love that one actually. I don't watch too many Telugu movies, but I particularly loved it. And I think my family made me watch it 3 times, but I actually enjoyed it. Yes. All right. Your favorite hero?
Akkineni Nageswar Rao.
Very close to your heart in more than one ways. All right. Yeah. And a heroine, if I may ask?
Savitri.
Savitri. You're a classic, aren't you?
Okay. Yeah, I'm an old man.
You're not old. No way. You're doing modern stuff and you're implementing and executing it much better than so many people I know. All right. Okay. Your winning mantra.
Winning mantra. I think it's discipline.
Okay. What gives you a thrill?
When I see the smile on the person's eye, a person's face, when the bandage is opened on the first post-operative day.
All right. I was expecting that one. Okay. What ticks you off?
When somebody tries to cover up.
All right. Okay. The one thing you wish you had invented.
The one thing I wish I had invented.
And let's go beyond eye care. We've talked a lot about eyes, and I'm sure there's so much more to you.
Something early morning, as soon as I get up, that can bring me a cup of coffee as soon as I ask for it.
And I'm guessing it's filter coffee.
Yeah.
The cappuccinos and espressos won't do for sure.
That's right.
All right. And the one thing which never fails to give you goosebumps.
No, I think the joy of seeing some of the rural youngsters who we train as nurse assistants and technicians achieving a lot. Like, for example, the first technician student getting a PhD from the University of New South Wales in Sydney. That was an occasion for goosebumps. And any such story of a life that was really touched and transformed gives me goosebumps.
All right, sir. And I have to ask you this because I still see an amazing childish curiosity in you, though you will deny it. So your first crush?
There was no first crush, unfortunately.
Come on, doctor. I can't let you get away that easily.
Maybe a girl in the village I grew up, I don't even remember now.
All right, doctor. So on the note of your first crush, I want to really thank you for the time that you've taken. It's been an honor and a privilege to speak with you. Wish you and the team all the very best. You've already treated 30 million. And I'm sure the way you're going, you're going to add another zero to the number of lives that you impact and get light into their lives. Wish you all the very best and every success to you and your team, sir. It's been a privilege to have you here.
Thank you very much. And it's been a great opportunity to discuss with you. And thank you.
Avaaz.com